Why is it that we would do a presentation on listening? I mean, look at our age here. We're not teenagers anymore, and we've been listening all of our life, right? We haven't? Well, maybe at the end of the day we can make an assessment as to if we really listen. My husband said to me one time, a couple of years ago, "I think you have selective listening." And I thought, what nerve? Why in the world would he say such a thing? I really thought that same comment about him. And I think what I found is that listening is really hard work. And the hardest form of listening is listening to those who are very close to us in our own household, in our own workplace. So let's see what we can do about listening today. I became interested in listening many years ago, and some of you know this because I have visited before, that I worked for two corporations in human resources. And one of the tasks that I was given to do was to interview and recruit and to orient new employees, particularly salespersons, inside salespersons and outside salespersons. And I loved the job. One of the things that I would do when they were new employees is to give them an effective listening test. And that was lots of fun. And I always took the test with them. And we'd go into this room and put on earphones and we'd listen to marvelous stories. And then we would see how much we really heard. So I'm not going to tell you what the percentage is right now. But I thought what we could do this morning is sort of have a similar experience. And I could start this morning with a story. Would you like to hear it? Okay. Would you like to hear it? Okay. I'm going to read it to you. And the theme of the story is fixing fences, an outdoor path to spiritual renewal. And it's about this gentleman named Patrick Mossman. So for the first couple of years, Pat Mossman never tallied up the volunteer hours he spent at Teka Boca, which was a boys' camp and retreat center deep in the heart of Texas Hill Country. When he did start logging the time to help the executive director with a grant application, the number that of hours that he was giving to volunteering turned out to be pretty staggering. He says it was often 20 hours or more a week. The secret to getting that level of engagement from a guy like Pat was to put a chainsaw or a post hole digger in his hands. "The outdoors feeds my spirit," he said. To spend the weekend clearing brush or splitting three cords of wood adds balance to my life. It helped that Pat has a flexible work schedule as an independent financial advisor. I spend a lot of time indoors working with clients, and when it comes to volunteer work, I prefer being outdoors, he said. It gives me time to pray and reflect. Pat's connection to Teka Boca began in 2009 when he answered an email request seeking volunteers to repair a fence and a horse pen. "I thought it would be a one-time thing," he said. But seeing the 63-year-old facility the first time convinced him of two fundamental truths about this camp. "There's a lot of it," he says, "and it's hard to maintain. But the more time that Pat spent around Teka Boca, the more intrigued he became by the programs. Being around the camp has given me hope that the world may not be going off the deep end after all. When you see how the boys are being spiritually fed, you think, wow, that's really encouraging. The priests and brothers are definitely making an impact who serve these young boys, but it's not only them. The counselors are great too, and they're all fabulous. Not everyone on the staff knows how to set a fence or build a chicken coop, but those skills turn out to be an important part of ministry. If you want campers to make salsa from tomatoes, jalapenos, and onions they picked from the garden, an 8-foot fence is needed to keep the hill country's hungry deer at bay. While Pat has served on the Teca Boca board and has become a regular contributor to cowboy night cookouts during the summer sessions, he doesn't need to be at the center of the programming action to get recharged by the camp. 90% of the time, I'm out there all by myself, doing anything that needs doing, he said. There's no schedule, and I enjoy that. Plus, I like seeing things look different after I'm done. Okay? All right. Would you like to take a little test? Oh, this is fun. It's not mandatory. But this was sort of in the vein of what we did when I worked in human resources. And I loved doing it. I learned so much from this exercise and from the people who took the test and my own self. So if you have a pencil and paper and you'd like to just for the heck of it, I'm going to ask you some questions about what did you hear. Okay? The first question would be, Pat embraced an outdoor path to what? And there's no right or wrong or no good or bad. Don't worry. Whatever you want to do. And the second question. Did you hear the first question? You want me to repeat it?
Yes.
All right, one more time. Pat embraced an outdoor path to what? The second question. What was he helping the executive director with? What was he helping the executive director with? The secret to getting a guy like Pat to volunteer is to put what in his hands? Do you remember? I'll read it again. The secret to getting a guy like Pat to volunteer is to put what in his hands? Here's an easy one. What was Pat's actual line of work? What year did Pat volunteer serving at Teca Boca? Do you remember? Did you hear?
Can you look at other people's papers?
No. No stress here. You're not a new employee and you're not planning to make a living by answering these questions. Where did Pat hope the world may not go? I will repeat it. Where did Pat hope that this world may not go? we're hoping the same thing. Okay, Pat is a regular contributor to what? He's a regular contributor to how much time does Pat spend out there by himself, mending fences and fixing things? How much time did he say that he spends out there by himself? What two kinds of schedule does he have? He mentioned two kinds of schedule that he keeps. Now here's a really easy one. Why does the camp need an 8-foot fence? What is Pat's last name? It was mentioned twice. What is Pat's last name? And the last question, what was his secret? Yes, what was his secret? He shared a secret with us. Here's a picture of Pat. It's a real story. And he looks like a Texan, right?
Yeah.
And he looks like a guy who likes to fix fences.
Yeah.
All right. Let me just give you the answers. But don't write them down now. Yes. Because then you can look and to see how many you actually got right. And however many you got right is okay. Or did not get right is okay. So the first question was, Pat embraced an outdoor path to, and the answer was spiritual renewal. Okay? Someone heard that. We hear what's important to us. We kind of tune out what is not relative to our personal life. What was he helping the executive director with?
Maintaining the camp grounds, fence building.
Writing a grant application. Okay,
don't
write it down now. Don't write it down now. The secret to getting a guy like Pat to volunteer is to put what in his hands? He named two things. A chainsaw and a post hole digger.
I just wrote tools.
That's what I know.
No. That's a little nebulous. All right. So, no cheating. Your job here depends on it. All right. What was Pat's actual line of work?
Financial. We all got
one. Yeah, financial advisor. That was an easy one. And what year did Pat begin to volunteer work at the camp? 2009. Where did Pat hope the world may not go to?
Off the deep end.
And Pat is a regular contributor to what?
Fixing
Camp Tecumseh.
Cowboy night cookouts.
Oh, cowboy night.
This campfire meal.
No. We can't make up answers. No. No. Okay, and how much time did Pat spend out there by himself?
20 hours.
I just said lots.
Wow, I never heard that. The answer is 90% of the time. All right, we're almost through this. What two kinds of schedule did he have? Very good. Flexible as an advisor, so flexible account. And no schedule when he's out there at camp. All right. Now, here was the easiest one. Why did the camp need an 8-foot fence?
Keep the deer out.
Why did we remember that one?
Well, I don't know. That just, it's logical.
It's so obvious.
There's logic to it. What is Pat's last name?
Mossman.
What? What did you put?
Mossman.
That's great. Who said Smith? Okay. And what was Pat's secret?
He outdoors.
He liked being alone.
Okay, let's go not.
Right, we're putting words in Pat's mouth, but that's not what he actually said. Living a balanced life is his secret. Okay, would you like to count up the correct answers, just for fun? Anyone brave enough to do that? What? Two, you had 2.5 right? All right. And she had 2? She had 5? How many?
3.
You had 7? Wow. Alice? 4? 6? Pardon? 2.5? Okay, 2.5. 4? Right. Anyone else would like to offer? We've had 2 and 4. I think 4 are was 6 the most that I heard.
7.
6.
6.5. Okay, 6. Okay, we're undecided. You had 7. Okay. All right. All right. In all of the effective listening tests that I ever gave to incoming salespersons, and you know, listening is critical to salespersons. Listening is critical to volunteers. The highest percentage was 55%. Across the board, we hear only 50% of what is said to us. I know Father Carl Errico visited here in the recent past, and I remember one thing that Father Carl Errico said years ago when he was in St. Louis. He said, You have to say something 7 times before people really hear it. So even the best of the new incoming salespersons was 55%, myself included. Okay? All right. So that really intrigued me, and I think that's why I was attracted to developing this workshop. And I heard a workshop many, many years ago on listening. Don't have notes, can't remember much of what was said. But I thought how interesting this would be for those of us in service who work with other people, particularly if we are a facilitator of a prayer group, if we are a mentor, certainly if we are a spiritual director. Anyone here a spiritual, certified spiritual director in this room? Okay. But I'm sure that many of you are mentors to other people who are on the spiritual journey and want to hear what you have to say. So they may be listening, but how important it is to listen to them. One of the things that I have learned as a presenter is that I think that I have learned the most by listening to people ask questions. I think that I have grown from disciplining myself to attempt to listen deeply to questions, because it expands what we are saying, and it takes what we are saying deeper. Is that, you know, and not only for the presenter, but for everyone. Consequently, we learn from one another as we listen to one another. So what I'd like to do this morning is just elaborate a little bit on the dynamics of effective, what could be effective listening, as I've learned over the years. Not to say that I am a perfect listener. And then this afternoon, we'll do a little bit of role playing. But you're going to hear throughout this morning until lunchtime, we're going to explore these 4 levels of listening. You know, there are stages of everything, stages of development, stages of learning, stages of deepening, levels of deepening. So we're going to look at the very way that we listen 90% of the time is at the literal level of listening. So we'll demonstrate that in our role playing after our break. And then if we become better listeners, we begin to listen at an active level. And we're going to define these terms. And when we are really listening, engaged, at the affective listening, and then at the transformative listening. And this is pretty rare, but I know that we have the capacity to begin to listen at the transformative level. And so we'll explore some of the characteristics and qualities of each of those. You have a handout. You don't have to spend a lot of time on it because everything I am going to say is in the handout, unless you just are a note taker and want to take notes. Let's look for a moment at the cultural attitudes toward listening. Generally, effective listening is hard work. Listening is hard work. In our culture, in our Western culture, and certainly in other cultures, there much of our dialogue is around debate. And we're hearing a lot of that, right? I turned on CNN just for a moment this morning. I thought I could get a weather report. I wanted to see what the weather was doing here in Florida and what the temperature was. And I never got to that because there was a debate going on. And I guess I don't have to tell you about what. So right now, there's a lot of debate going on in our culture. There's also what we call discussion. And discussion is usually centered around what we are most interested in, are invested in. In other words, when there's discussion, we hear it at a deeper level if we have an interest or if it is impacting a part of our life. Remember what almost everyone in Pat's, in that little effective listening test, almost everyone answered that first question, that Pat's quest, and the reason why he was volunteering was spiritual renewal. Those two words stood out to everyone here. And you got that because you were invested in your own personal spiritual renewal. So much of our cultural way of communicating also is attempting to get our point across. And that oftentimes means one-upmanship. I want you to get my point. Your point has less value than mine. So I'm going to work really hard to get my point across. It may appear that I'm doing it with utmost charity, but most of us have a hidden agenda when we are trying or attempting to get our point across. Would you agree?
Yes.
Have you discovered that?
Yes.
Have you stood convicted in that? Okay. Stephen Covey, you know, he's written a lot on leadership. He said that the majority of people do not listen with the intent to understand, but they listen with the intent to respond or to reply. Okay? And you know that in our human condition, that if someone is expecting a response from us, that as they are discussing or presenting dialogue, we are already forming in the deepest recesses of our mind what our response is going to be. So remember, too, that 50% is what we actually hear. So we're only hearing 50%. And at that point in time, if we are formulating prematurely our response, we probably hear 20%. How do we engage in honest dialogue and honest communication? The problem is listening. Now, why is it a problem? One of the reasons, physically speaking, is because our mind thinks 3 or 4 times faster than most people speak. Did you ever notice that? Okay, maybe I'm saying something to you. I'm asking you if you'd like to take an effective listening test, and you're already generating a response, which is mostly no. And I can tell by your body language, I already know the answer. So there is a lot of nonverbal response and communication in terms of dialogue and listening. Can we tell by a person's body language if they are truly listening to us?
Yes.
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 Yes. And I'm sure the rector, when he's giving a homily, yes, could look at the congregation and know whether he...
It's slumping.
Yeah. Right. And I taught 8th grade in Perry School of Religion in my Catholic church years ago because nobody else would take the 8th graders. And I remember the stance was sort of like that. But you just do what we do. All right. The average person speaks approximately 125 to 175 words a minute. That's a lot to ingest. So it's a guarantee that when you leave this day, you will all be brain dead. So you wonder why we can attend a workshop and sit there and go home so drained and tired. It's because the speaker has spoken approximately 125 to 175 words a minute. That's incredible. No wonder when I get on a plane to go home, I don't want to sit next to someone who wants to talk. I just have to be still. Okay. Let me ask you this. What do you think the qualities of a good listener might be? From your lived experience.
Eye contact.
Okay. And why is that?
Your interest is there by looking at their face.
It helps you to concentrate.
It helps me focus.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Concentrate.
Posture.
Posture.
Okay. Trust.
Yes.
Concern for the speaker. The what was that?
Concern for the speaker.
And trust.
Trust.
Respect.
Yeah. I want to truly see who it is who is speaking to me. One thing that comes to my mind right now, so I don't want to lose this, so I'm going to say it early on. In centering prayer, I want to hear who or what it is that is speaking to me unsaid. Does that make sense? So the speaker, when I'm with someone, I want to truly see them, to be able to hear them. Okay, what other qualities would you say?
Empathy.
Pardon?
Empathy.
Empathy. Define that in terms of listening.
That you care about what the other person has to say, that you're not just... they're not annoying you. You care about what they're saying. You can relate to what they're saying.
Okay.
There's a level of connectiveness to
yes.
what the person is saying.
Yes.
Non-judgmental.
Absolutely. Which is hard. Which is really hard.
Got Susan.
Non-judgmental. Yes. What else?
Patience.
Oh, wow. I shared last night at dinner with a couple of people that in the week before, this last week, before coming here, knowing that I had to talk about listening. So wherever I went, where it was the bank or Walmart or wherever, I decided to listen to people and to see if people were listening to me. And at the bank, I had some kind of financial thing I had to do fill out, and I told her the dollar amount and the cents, and she couldn't 5 seconds she got the dollar amount, but I had to repeat the cents. But that's okay, because I went to Walmart and I thought she said to insert the card in the chip reader now, and she didn't say that. She said it doesn't work. Oh, okay, so I'm inserting the card and, oh, I see, you said it didn't work. So it was just amazing to listen to myself and to observe others. And I will tell you, it's really true, 50%, and you got to hear it 7 times. Anything else that you would add to this?
I just want to say the best listening I've ever done is as a volunteer for hospice. Mm-hmm. And we were trained, but the intention is so different. It's so, you know, to go in and really care and to hear what the person is saying or not saying, you know, it's quality time.
Yes.
Best thing I've ever done, yeah.
Yes. It takes an amazing amount of energy.
So you have to learn to take care of yourself.
Yes.
And not do it when you're scattered and, you know, only when you can give the energy to it.
Yes. Okay. I'm just going to move ahead a little bit. And, two, I will be giving just a little making a decision, a handout called Making a Decision to Listen Masterfully. Just little nuances about to help us to be more aware of listening. The qualities of a good listener. They ask questions sometimes. If we don't understand, we don't just let it bypass us, but we ask questions. I ask a lot of questions. Pay attention to what's being said. Don't take word-for-word notes. And I know some people just have to do that. And I was one of those people years ago. I don't take many notes anymore. But it's harder to be engaged as a listener. And I noticed sometimes, if I was really acutely aware, I would catch myself not writing down exactly what the listener said, but the way I wanted to repeat it to someone else. So inadvertently, subconsciously, I would might change the words a little bit, not to reflect the actual words that the speaker said. Interesting. To really listen, it makes people feel like they are being heard. You know how we talk about intention, attention, and centering prayer?
Yes.
There's also intention and attention in developing listening skills. So we make a decision to be intentional about listening to the other. In centering prayer, we make an intention to be present to the other. Right? Okay. So we make a decision to listen masterfully. Are carefully, which means we listen with that we are full of care for that person. In terms of patience, I have a 19-year-old granddaughter who is very verbal, very vocal, and she's in and out of our home. They live 5 minutes from us, which is a blessing. But I have to hear every word about the boyfriend, about the first year of college, about her grades, about the teachers that she doesn't like, about her friends and their whole life and their parents, about the future, about her goals, about her failures, about who she's getting along with, about the most recent crisis in her life. And I will tell you that this might go on for an hour and a half. It takes a lot of patience. Now, this is every visit, but that's just Zoe. So by that time, my husband, he's busy watching football, so he has already tuned it out. This is not anything he's invested in or has energy for. But I'm grandma, and I can relate to some of the things, and I want to, with intention, be present. It takes an enormous amount of patience. Where there may be other people in our life where they don't say anything, and it's like trying to, you want to listen to them, but you want them to speak. So there's all of these different dynamics about communication and listening and speaking. And Anne, you brought up an important point. I was thinking about this, too, with all of the rhetoric going on about what's happening in our culture right now at the government level. And when someone is speaking to us, and we have the intention to be present, And we think fondly of the person, but we are totally on a different planet in terms of perspective, opinion, value, morals. How do we handle that? Anne said, to be neutral.
And non-judgmental.
And have patience. However, when you feel the blood rising to your head, but you still have a smile on your face, but the smile disappears as the conversation goes on, that's when listening is really hard. Can we have empathy for their personal opinion and perspective? Can we still care for them, that our listening is full of care? And can we really be in that neutral place? And on that, how to make a decision to listen masterfully. Sometimes I have to return to my sacred word during communication or an active prayer sentence. I have to remind myself that there's a third person in this dialogue. Teresa of Avila said a wonderful thing about prayer. And if we have intentional listening, it's really being prayerful, engaging in a prayerful experience with the other. Teresa said that most people have difficulty with prayer because for many people, prayer is hard work too. But the difficulty stems from the fact that we often pray as though God is absent. How many years did we pray as though God was absent? How often do we still do that? So I have to remind myself by a sacred word or by an active sentence or by something that comes in my mind or where the generosity expands my heart to be present in that situation, make no judgment, stay in that neutral place, halt any of my own negative thoughts, and return to that centered space. That makes sense? But we forget to do that.
I agree with you 100% if it's a political discussion. But if a person is, I'm going through a hard time right now with a close friend whose husband's dying. If she's crying, I feel like it's okay to show myself. If someone's really happy, it's okay to smile. I agree with you that there's times when I have to steel myself and be neutral. And I know that's the most godly response. Because if I jump back and say, there are times when I say, you know what, I hear you, but I have to say I respectfully disagree with you. But I think it depends on the situation.
Yes, I would totally agree with that. I totally agree with that. And I am a certified spiritual director, but I will tell you I am the worst spiritual director in the world, because if my prayer is always, don't let them cry, don't cry, because I cry. It's like, darn it, you know? So, yes. But sometimes all of those particular people just needed somebody to cry with them, you know? So, yes, definitely. All right, let's take a look, moving on, because we have a lot to do today and this day will go very quickly. The psychological dimension. You know, there's the literal level, there's the spiritual level of listening, there's the psychological dimension of listening. What's the psychological, what's going on in our psyche? What's going on in their psyche? And when I was going through pastoral ministry studies, one of the exercises that we had to do that was most helpful is that we had to do what was called verbatims. Has anyone in college or had to do verbatims? Okay. Rector John has done that. So the exercise was that people would speak to us and tell us a story or what's going on in their life. But over here, that there's an intuitive, this intuitive knowing is that, can we intuit what is really being said? So we would have to write that out. And that takes a lot of life experience and skill and the intention and attention to be able to at the same time be fully present and full of care to that person, but understand here the unknown that is also being communicated to you. So that would be a part of the psychological dimension of listening. So, and I think this is where we get into those different areas of communication and dialogue, Tish. And the ability or inability at the psychological level of each person to arrive at self-intimacy. Not everyone is able to do that, you know. Again, we talk about stages or levels, you know. Sometimes it's this much for a person. Sometimes it's this much. And sometimes it grows and sometimes it doesn't. So if a person is excessively shy or takes a long time to process interiorly, is afraid of exposure, is afraid of transparency, most of it is rooted in fear or cultural conditioning. But we have to have the recognition also that each person is different and each situation is different. So thank you for bringing that up. Also, has the listener developed the capacity to listen and to truly hear? In this next week, when you go out and about, wherever you go, just do that little exercise. Listen to how people listen to you. And listen to yourself. And notice, be a witness, an observer of how you are listening to others. Listening, it is said that it is the unsung hero of communication. You know, we love to praise good speakers. If Thomas Keating was here today, no matter what he'd say, we just think it was absolutely wonderful. Right. Because words are powerful. But listening, you know, there's no praise for listeners. But listening can be equally as powerful. And good listeners may never win an award. That's for sure. So let's take a look for a moment at the spiritual dimension of listening. In the spiritual dimension of listening, well, and you know, in terms of contemplative outreach, we do a lot of work on the essence and nature of servant leadership. And I think, I've come to think that listening with intention and attention is a high level of servant leadership, being in service to one another. And I know that years ago, I remember Father Thomas asking if we can, how can we take this to the contemplative dimension? How could we take whatever we do to the contemplative dimension? Because we say we're contemplatives and we're on the contemplative journey, right? Yes?
Yes.
Okay. So even in terms of servant leadership, how can we take that to the contemplative dimension? We know what service is. And I remember Father Thomas saying about servant leadership, every time that term would come up, he would say, well, you know, we've only scratched the tip of the iceberg in terms of our understanding what servant leadership is in the contemplative dimension. And so perhaps we've only scratch the surface in understanding what listening is in terms of the contemplative dimension. Look at Lectio Divina, and the emphasis that we put on that, and it's all about hearing. And it's all about moving deeper into that transformative moment, those four moments of Lexio. It's all about being a good listener. So the spiritual dimension of listening is an act of servant leadership. We are in service to that person. It's an informal relationship grounded in God-centered listening to one another at the level of friendship. It is centered on God in such a way that each person, if we are, we could come back and kind of look at this, and maybe in our example this afternoon, we would be able to say, oh, well, it's this level, when I would say, centered on God, listening is centered on God in such a way that each person is listening to God in the other. Where would that be? How do we become a listening presence? Listening carefully, which is simply full of care for the other person. Let's take a look for a moment at the contemplative dimension of listening, which really all of it is a contemplative dimension of listening. I love the servant leader songs of Isaiah. And in Isaiah chapter 55, it mentions a listening together, each one to the other and to the Spirit in their midst. So as Teresa says, we often forget that even in a listening process, a simple listening process, that there's a third person that has joined the conversation in silence, but is very present to both. It is beyond the psychological dimension. It is when we can truly halt our own thoughts if our human condition begins to get in the way, or our emotional program for happiness and for being right and for stressing our opinion wants to become present. It's listening. It's a personal form of communion. It's listening as unconditional surrender to God. Listening as waiting upon God in watchful expectancy. How wonderful it is to get together for lunch or for a meal or just for a conversation with people you know and love and appreciate. There's always a sense of holy expectation when you meet. Can you kind of feel that? Mm-hmm. And again, when a speaker comes to speak, if Father Thomas was here or Richard Rohr or some of the spiritual celebrities, you would be listening with holy expectation, holy anticipation, because I might hear one thing that is going to be heart-piercing and life-changing. Is that right? Okay, so if we could listen like that to one another always. Now, here's another metaphor that intrigues me. Listening as an emptiness. How do I empty myself that I might hear more deeply? Listening as this emptiness that waits to realize the fullness of the message that's being spoken. We will learn a lot more by listening than by speaking. How do I return to empty? We're going to come back to this. How wonderful it would be if we could approach listening as a spiritual practice or discipline. And I'm going to reiterate that fostering a deeper listening aids our receptivity to listen in centering prayer. In a sense, listening is a momentary death to self. if I'm totally focused on the other person, it's a choice I make, a momentary death to my own perspective, my own opinion, my own what I'd like to say. Both the speaker and the listener are instruments of God. Just think about that. That's an awesome thing. Both the speaker and the listener are instruments of God. The listener is, and again we could look at this, is abandoned to both the speaker and God in faith. A good listener imparts personal opinions only when moved interiorly by the Spirit to do so or invited by the speaker. Now, is that the case for everyone we talk to in every given time? Heck no. We can have a group of friends there and we can all be talking at the same time, or we can always all be getting our point across, or all be sharing a recent experience, and it's just chaos and confusion and it's wonderful. But you know what I'm saying in terms of when people really want to be heard, and people in our own household, people in our own workplace, people in our church, the people with whom, for whom we are serving, really want to be heard. A listener does not offer a resolution or formulate a decision for the other person, but occasionally, just recently, in talking to someone, they would interject maybe every 10 minutes. What do you think? So what do you think? Or I might ask you now, okay, what do you think about listening? And so you'd have to stop for a minute and then begin to form your own response based on your cultural conditioning and your life experience. Is that right? Right. But we're invited to do that. We don't impose it. Opinions are formed based on personal perception, culture, observation, and experience. And let's look at these four levels of listening for just a moment. As I said earlier, that most of us, 90% of the time, listen at a literal level. And that means what you hear is what you get, or what you don't get, as we illustrated this morning in our story about Pat Mossman, or what we miss. Active listening, the listener will generally give signals to the speaker that to clarify the dialogue, or that they are listening. In other words, there's something going on between the speaker and the listener. In the affective mode of listening, there is that emptying that we mentioned that begins to happen when my opinion wants to get in there, or I'd like to share my perspective, or I think you're, maybe I have a better idea, or whatever it is that is surfacing, how do I go back to empty? And I think I mentioned a sacred word. Sometimes if it's very intense, I might say, oh Lord, come to my assistance. But if we can reach that place of being empty, we hear at a deep level and know. Okay? This is coupled with what I call that sacred gnosis, or that intuitive knowing. And I think, again, going back to that verbatim, it's all of a sudden too, and I think it's the inspiration and aided by grace of the Spirit in our midst, that there's unspoken dialogue going on here and transmission. That now, in that effective place, I am beginning to intuit and know. And then transformative listening. In you, I see and hear the face of Christ. I once had a spiritual director. I can't remember at which workshop or presentation that I have mentioned him before. And I tell a little story about him, and it has nothing to do with listening. It's a different thing. But some spiritual directors are like potters, and they creatively mold the person, or their goal is to, with utmost charity, mold them into perfection. But then there's the spiritual director who is like the blacksmith, and he sort of pounds you into perfection. Well, that was the spiritual director. So occasionally we would go nose to nose, because I didn't always agree with him. And certainly he didn't always agree with me. But when I could really be still and listen, there were times, generally at the, you know, probably I was a directee for about 3 years, maybe 4 years. And toward the end of that time, what I would notice is that, not in that moment, but afterwards in reflection, when I could really be still, when we had sort of gelled as spiritual director, directee, and I could be responsive and open, I would notice how everything would change. Everything would change. The light in the room would change. That I would hear the words in sort of a slow motion mode, but that I would hear them not, you know, when we hear, it generally enters through the head center and often stays there. But there would be a remarkable, very subtle movement to heart center. And I began to intuit that. And I would have to say that that was a moment of transformative listening where we are totally empty, totally open. In him I saw the face of Christ. I heard the words of the Spirit. So this is certainly the intuitive level and the beginning of unity and the perception of the reality of the Spirit in our midst. We may experience that in a homily. We might receive one word that is life-changing. All right. Let's take a break here, a 15-minute break, and then we'll come back at 11:30, and we'll have some fun.